Hello and welcome to Your Mind Matters, MPL's first mental health awareness podcast where we discuss mental health and all things related. I'm your host, Lana Bolijack with the Education and Literacy Department.
And I'm Bassam Habib, the BUL and MPL Program Manager.
And today we have a guest that hopefully all of you can learn from, whether you are a she or a he or a they or a them. We can all learn about motherhood. So we have Lauren Jones here. She's a certified lactation counselor from Realistically Fed. Lauren, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I did my best.
Yeah, Lauren. Right? Lauren is actually the reason why I'm here at the library.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yeah, Lauren is the foundation of me coming here.
Onto the foundation.
Yeah, it's a really long story, but we can shorten the story. Basically, Lauren was like, yo, check out this job. And I was like, oh, that's dope. And then I applied, and now here I am.
And now we're on this podcast, full circle.
Yeah.
I love
full
it. Circle.
Yeah, moment. We're here.
Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the conversation, Lauren, we always do an icebreaker for all of our guests.
Great.
And since we know that you just gave birth to a beautiful, bouncing baby boy. All the alliteration. Congrats, by the way.
Thanks.
We just wanted to ask you, what are some things that you're learning as a new mom? What's been your funnest adventure so far?
Oh, there's so many things that I could say. Well, he's 3 months old, so I think I'm learning something new about babies every single day, along with something new about myself every day. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing, though, is just learning how to be more flexible with my time and with my emotions. That's probably the biggest thing at this point.
Yeah.
Only 3 months in.
For sure.
Is he communicating with you in the way that you imagined?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool. He's, yeah. I think, a couple of weeks ago, maybe more like 4 weeks ago, he started smiling a lot.
Oh.
And so
was he frowning before? Was he just had no emotion on his face?
Yeah, no emotion. But yeah, he started smiling just randomly, but now he is, when I smile at him or talk to him, he smiles back at me, which is so cool.
Oh,
yeah.
God. It's just going to build and build and build.
I know.
It's going to be an unbreakable bond that's going to make you feel absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
He starts driving a car.
I can't go there, but Sam.
Yeah, I can't go there. It's too far. That's too much. We're thinking way too much ahead. There's like childhood is split up into three parts, like 0 to 3, and then 3 to like 6, and then 6 to like 10 or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. Some guy in like the 60s, I think, is the one that came up with that. The guy who came up with the terrible twos.
Oh.
I think he was a pretty problematic guy. So everything that I'm about to say is based on an extremely problematic foundation. But the first part, it's like super chill. You know, there's no words. They're just coming up with some words.
Mm-hmm.
And then the middle part is really the part that's going to stick, is what this guy who has never, I feel like, had a baby says.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
It's going to be an interesting ride.
Sure.
I can already feel that. And I have a lot of friends with children at all different ages. And, yeah, I don't think it ever gets easier. It gets maybe, like, more exciting or just different.
Yeah, more expensive, I feel like.
Definitely more expensive, I think.
From diapers to iPads.
Yeah.
Oh, and Lord. Then,
that's choices, though.
Yeah, that's choices. That's true. Are you going to get him on an iPad?
I don't want to.
Yeah, don't be an so iPad. That's,
he's going to be, like, so left out in school, but he might also be really cool.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, that's fine if you're left out because you don't have an iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know
I'm
how
okay
to communicate.
With that.
I know that's way too many, like, 5-year-olds with iPads.
Same.
In my life, right?
Yeah.
Now.
I used to work at a country club, and whenever kids would come in, the parents would be like, here's your device, so they could drink wine and...
Yeah,
I think disconnect from their child.
I think there's a time and a place for an iPad or a screen.
Yeah,
I don't know if I would purchase one specifically for my child.
Yeah,
does Will, your husband, want him to be on an iPad?
No, we are very similar.
Okay, cool.
With that.
So you guys are on the same page.
We're on the same page.
My boy is not gonna be yeah. on any type of technology.
Yeah, and I think that we've talked about this a lot, actually, and I think that comes from, like, we grew up with the type of technology that kids have now. I mean, they have way more, but, like, I mean, we were in high school when social media was going on, mm-hmm. and we had cell phones, like,
yeah.
in high school and after, so we kind of know what it feels like to for our mental health to suffer from devices. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll be able to hopefully set better parameters for our kids because we, like, know it, you know?
So, yeah, it's, we'll see. It is really crazy how they just get on it. And there isn't, like, any, I don't know, test or anything that you have to take. You just are turned four and then you just get an iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, like you said, that's a choice thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. I didn't have a cell phone until I was like 13.
Same.
And my parents were like, why do you need one? My dad bought me a walkie-talkie.
Whoa.
No
cool.
joke.
Yeah.
And was like, I'll walkie-talkie you when I'm on my way to pick you up for school. And I'm like, there's like a 2 mile, like.
You got to remember to turn it on. Like, dad's probably going to be talking
right.
to me.
Yeah.
The little yeah. turns to the right channel. And he's like, I'm going to call on channel 20.
I'm going to save that. I'm going to do that for Heartwind.
Oh, you should totally do that.
Yeah.
You should, like, go
Let's
back.
Let's bring that back.
Yeah, should, when you're within a two-mile radius, just walkie-talkie your child. Yeah.
Let me tell you, when I grew up with DSL. I had DSL, like, dial-up. Yeah. We had to dial
it. All of us had
dial-up.
You
had dial-up?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was very young, though. I was, like, six with dial-up.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, like, when I was six, it was, like, dialing it up. And then I would sit there, and it would be, like, and then it would be like,
yeah, and nobody else could be on the phone.
No,
yeah, my brother would be like on the computer researching for like a paper, and then my dad's like, "You have to get off the computer. I have to call someone." It's
yeah,
I miss those days.
Good times.
I know.
I miss AIM. Like I miss MySpace and AIM.
Did you call it AIM? I called it AIM.
AIM.
Yeah.
I said AIM, but. I miss MySpace because that was like a good mental health. I feel like that was good for your mental health because it was all of my friends knew exactly where they stood with me.
That's why it was bad.
That's amazing though.
There's a lot of predators on MySpace.
Are you talking about top 8?
Top 8. I had a top 12 and then I would like hack it with the codes and have like a top 30. Did you ever do that or you would go
No, I didn't know how to hack. It was so stressful for me because I did have more than 8 friends that I wanted to be top. Yeah. And I was like,
there was a code for it. You had to get the code.
Gosh. And I wanted to be on everyone's top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Did you have friends like fighting over you? Like, I'm not in your top 8.
There was probably AIM conversations about that. Did you see Lauren's top 8?
Yeah. Yeah, they were all just talking about how they wanted to be in your top 8 and just reviewing your top 8 weekly.
And then collectively saying, we're taking her out of our top 8. Who knows?
Good times.
Yeah, you got to keep them away from your child now, those people.
Yeah.
That were hating
that
on
we're
your
That were not
8.
In your top 8. All right, Lauren, let's get into it. So tell us a little bit about you and what you do and why you became a lactation consultant or counselor. I don't know which one I should say.
Lactation counselor.
Counselor.
Yeah.
Great.
So I started off in my like professional world with a nutrition background. I went to college in Alabama. I went to Auburn. And I studied, I actually had an interdisciplinary studies major where I could kind of piece together what I wanted to do. So I did nutrition, health administration, and hunger studies. So I was very interested in like the health world, mostly promotion, like health promotion. And so when I graduated, I was a health coach for a while. I moved to Nashville and got a health coaching job. It was miserable. It was in a call center. It was my hours were from 10 to 7 p.m., ugh. So when you first moved to Nashville, you like go to so many shows and I was like getting off of work, going home, changing into my like cool show outfits and then like going to concerts.
This is like a hotline that you call for health coach?
No, it was basically with certain insurance providers would allow different. So you would have a health coach and if you participated with your health coach, this is so, you're going to love this, Sam. You would get discounts on your prescription drugs. It was such a ridiculous thing.
Yeah, that's totally insane.
Like, it was like,
yeah,
talk about your health and try to get advice on your health so you can get
access
to your prescription drugs. That, yeah, so that was a whole thing. I did that for a little while, and then my goal was to get a job at WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, and with the health department. They provide supplemental, just nutrition benefits. I mean, kind of like food stamps, but healthier. I'm putting air quotes because it wasn't always the healthiest foods. But also at WIC, we did breastfeeding promotion. And so when I finally got a job there, which was really great, I loved my time at WIC. They actually sent me to become a certified lactation counselor in 2017. And back then, you had to like travel to the classes and stay there for a week and study and take the exam. Now it's all virtual. So if anybody's interested in becoming a lactation counselor, it's a lot easier to do now, which I love. But they sent me to do that, paid for it and everything. So I worked for WIC for about 4 years and then had some other jobs. That's where I met Bassam. We were in social work world together pandemic, and we both were like, we got to get out of here. This is really draining
Ginger's
us.
Eyeball fell out. I was like, dang, I don't want that to happen to me.
Mm-hmm. No, her eyeball didn't fall out.
Okay.
But she was super stressed, and her body was telling her, and she was our supervisor, and we were really concerned about her and our own mental health during that time.
In the social work field here, and I think everywhere in America, but there's not enough social workers for the amount of people that they give you.
Yeah.
Sam and I don't have those backgrounds. Like, we are not trained social workers, and we were doing the work of social workers. And that was, I mean, I felt ill-equipped.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was like max load. So it was like 60 people were.
Yeah. I think I had 40 on my caseload in the pandemic.
And it was like
kids aging out of foster care.
All of their needs.
It was hard.
Therapy and resources. And
yeah.
So eventually your eyeball pops out of your face.
Yeah. Yeah. So then after that job, I started seeing a therapist for the first time. Mm. And through that process, I realized I was helping folks with breastfeeding on the side, like all the time for free. And my therapist was like, why are you not doing this as a business? And so that kind of motivated me to start doing it more on my own and home visiting and out in the community. So I started that in 2021.
Oh, okay.
And now it's 2024.
Yeah.
Wow.
Still going strong.
Yeah, it's crazy. The time has flown.
Yeah.
It's going by really fast.
Yeah.
I mentioned my friend Kelsey earlier, but she and I had a conversation, I think in 2021 as well, too. She was still getting her certification and explaining to me, like, the importance of lactation in children and in mothers and how it's a way of bonding with your child. It's also, like, a way of just promoting, like, better, not just, like, physical health, but also, like, emotional health for your child. And we had like a whole hour-long conversation. She's very passionate about like the difference between like a Similac versus breastfeeding and like how there's like studies that show that like children who are breastfed longer have like better bonds with their parents and better emotional connection. And talk a little bit about like just kind of like some things that you've maybe learned about breastfeeding.
There are so many benefits to breastfeeding, definitely on the emotional level. I think that comes from, because when you're breastfeeding, you are spending more time with your child. Typically, babies who are bottle fed with formula, they don't have as many feeding times, especially in the early months. So when you're breastfeeding and you're breastfeeding on demand, you're basically meeting your child's needs every time they're showing you that they have a need. Mm. And yeah, I mean, how great is that for your mental health and for just knowing that someone is there for you and showing up every time you have a need? That's a huge part of it. And then just on a strictly like health level, the benefits of breastfeeding are insane. Like I if you're interested in this, like, you can Google it and find all the studies that are around what breastfeeding can do for your bodies. Babies who are breastfed are, they have a healthier gut microbiome. Mm-hmm. There's research on that. What else? Lower rates of childhood obesity. They get sick less because their mother's milk is making antibodies for things that they come in contact to. So like if a virus is circling through your community or in your family, mom's body is going to make some antibodies to protect really the whole family for that virus. Baby gets them obviously through breastfeeding, but like you can put a little breast milk in dad's coffee or mom's coffee, you know? Mm-hmm. So
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if you want to learn more about breastfeeding, Realistically Fed is one of our incredible Be Well partners that has been doing like absolutely amazing programming across like five branches now. We're at Madison, Thompson Lane, Maine.
Edmondson Pike. Inglewood.
Are we missing somebody?
Yeah.
I feel like we're missing somebody. And all the stories that you've told me and that I keep hearing from like librarians and people that are going to the classes are like, everyone's mind is just expanding with all of the knowledge about breastfeeding.
I'm so glad.
We're about to have it in like Arabic. We have the Spanish class.
We're trying in Arabic. We have it in Spanish though.
Yeah.
We just had our first successful Spanish breastfeeding class, and Cecilia, the lactation counselor who's teaching that, she has three more scheduled at the Madison Library. So that's really exciting.
So come through, pull up to...
come to a breastfeeding class.
Come to a breastfeeding class.
Even if you're not expecting,
you
can come to a class. Like, it's open to everyone.
And I like the bring the family vibe.
Yes.
Because it's like, a lot of like men don't come to information, don't have the literacy of that kind of stuff. And I feel like if they just had the literacy of it, a lot of like...
Partners are encouraged. And I like try to put that out there when I'm promoting the class. And the feedback that I've gotten from partners that come is like, you know, wow, I had no clue.
Yeah.
And I had no clue how much work this is going to be. This is really, I've gotten a few folks telling me, oh, I know how to better support mom now through this time. Because a lot of non-birthing and non-lactating parents feel kind of like, what am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when a mom is breastfeeding and a bottle's not introduced yet. So, yeah, come to a class.
I want to kind of piggyback off of that question from a lens of, like, a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically male partners, because a lot of them, I think a lot of men, like you said, they don't have the literacy. They're not, they don't consider that that's something that they would need to know or know anything about. And not just with lactation, but just, like, preparing for motherhood in general.
Mm.
What would you say to like someone who they're about to have a child and they don't feel like it's something that they need to know? And whether that's lactation or postpartum or anything in that realm that doesn't directly affect the other partner, what would you say to kind of encourage them to kind of get involved a little bit more?
I'll throw like birth education in there too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, if you are a partnership, you are going to be speaking to the partner. You are the biggest support person for the birthing parent or the lactating parent. I've been saying this all the time to Will. I'm like, I could not do this without you. I mean, all of it through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And luckily, I mean, he knew he was going to have to come to a breastfeeding class, but we did all of the like birth education together and all of that. And I can't speak for him, but I can tell that that made an impact on him in becoming a parent too. It just makes it, I think he just feels even more involved than he would have been if we wouldn't have done all of that education together. So yeah, I think you're the biggest supporter of your birthing partner and lactating partner. So show up.
Yeah.
I mean, and I have a lot of moms who will come to class and their partners won't be there, and they'll say after class, man, I wish I would have brought him, or I wish I would have brought them to the class. Like, I'm like, bring him to another one. You can come to another one if you want. But
yeah, for sure.
is really good information. Like, like there's a lot of stuff that is, you would think that it's like the allergy part where like you get less allergies. That part, okay, like I get it, but the part of like put a little bit of breast milk in dad's coffee, I would have never thought about.
Yeah.
Create antibodies like, for the whole family.
I would have never.
Yes.
It's like a commercial.
Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Breast milk.
You can also, summertime's coming up. Breast milk helps if you get a bad sunburn. You can rub it on your skin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
What?
There's so many things that you can do with breast milk.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Here's like, you know, a non-lactating person question.
Okay.
What all is involved in the production of breast milk? Like, why is it, why does it have all of these healing properties? You know
what I mean? I don't know why.
Like, what's going on?
I don't know why, but if you're asking like how it happens, it's all hormonal. So we have certain hormones that like make this process happen. It starts during pregnancy. You are basically, your body produces, starts producing the milk around the time that you can feel your baby. So yeah, even if you choose not to breastfeed, your body is going to have, that milk will be there after birth, which is crazy. So it's, and that's like, that's an interesting thing to think about, like folks who are choosing not to try, they still need education on what do I do when my milk comes in and I don't want to use it. A lot of people come to breastfeeding classes not knowing if they want to breastfeed or not. And I think most of the time they're like, ooh, yes, I want to try this, even if they were on the fence. But yeah, your body is just going to do it. Yeah.
You're gonna, you're gonna find me like on a on the TLC's My Strange Addiction after this conversation.
Oh my god!
What for what?
For breast milk. I'm gonna just be...
There already is a My Strange Addiction about that.
Oh really?
Probably. Okay.
I mean, there's a My Strange Addiction for like eating toilet paper. I feel like that's that's relatively tame compared to some of the things that people
and,
are addicted
to. And like bodybuilders are buying breast milk.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Nowadays,
and I know some people too will. Just buy, like, you can buy somebody's breast milk.
Yeah.
Like, and or, to just drink it.
But here's the thing. So, I don't know if you guys know this, but we do have a milk bank here in Middle Tennessee where you can donate your breast milk if you have extra, or there's a lot of folks who, if they have already weaned their baby, or if they had a pregnancy or stillbirth, they still want to provide, like, a pregnancy loss or stillbirth, they still want to provide. That breast milk that is coming inevitably for other babies. So, yeah, there's milk available. I always tell folks, if you need breast milk because your supply is low or something, ask a friend or, like, take milk that's donated. Never buy it from someone because you don't know what the motive is there.
Yeah.
So that's definitely – that's I think that's, like – lactation counselor and doula code, we like tell our clients, like, if you need milk, it's it comes from donations, not from
pain.
You don't want like any pyroxene ammonium in your
you don't
milk.
Want anything other than breast milk in your breast milk.
What are the like barriers for people that is it more of a social you know, going back to work, what do you see as like a barrier for people that decide that they don't want to breastfeed?
It is a ton of things. I think sometimes well, I think one of the biggest things is lack of support. So if breastfeeding's not going well and you need help and you don't know where to get it from, so lack of support, not knowing that you can call a lactation counselor or go to the St. Thomas Free Clinic for breastfeeding help. I think another one is perceived insufficient milk supply. So a lot of women feel like they're not going to make enough or they're not making enough, and then they'll switch to pumping. Which sometimes switching to pumping a little too early can tank your supply, or it could just not grow your supply as big as it could have been if you were breastfeeding on demand. And then, yeah, going back to work. Like, this is, we could have a whole nother podcast about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to work earlier than 3 months, and even at 3 months, that's when a lot of folks who started breastfeeding taper off around that time.
How, what is the healthy amount of breastfeeding? Like, how long should you breastfeed your child?
So the World Health Organization recommends 2 years.
Okay. Mm. But there are some people who...
There's some people that go...
breastfeed until, like, 10.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, and in countries where there's not enough food or there's not a clean water supply, that's where we see the highest rates of extended breastfeeding. But, yeah, I think I saw something recently, like, well, I don't want to say a statistic that I don't know exactly what it was, but the World Health Organization does recommend to breastfeed until 2.
Yeah. And I know there is something to be said about people who are in lower income areas or who have to work after giving birth, don't have the luxury of having a maternity leave, and just kind of deciding not to breastfeed because, well, I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Similac is cheap. I'll just do.
It's not cheap, though. That's the conundrum.
It's not. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not.
That's the conundrum. I mean, if you qualify for WIC, you and WIC is a national program, so if you qualify for WIC, you can get formula for free.
Mm-hmm.
It might not always be, you know, the amount that your baby needs. You might have to still pay out of pocket for some.
Gotcha.
But no, formula is expensive.
Between formula and diapers, I think you're going to break
the
bank.
100%. But, so breastfeeding is free and it's a lot safer. So you've seen all of these like formula recalls. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. But we've been seeing that a lot more. And there's a specific way that you have to prepare formula too. And so if you're not preparing it safely, then that increases the risk of maybe it not being healthy for your baby. But yeah, that's a huge conundrum.
Yeah.
Because yeah, if you don't have maternity leave and you have to go back to work at 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Hopefully you do qualify for WIC if you stop breastfeeding.
Are there resources in Nashville that kind of help supplement, like, mothers who don't have the time, trying to get them either educated or get them access or something to where they know, like, hey, this is, one, your body's creating it, so you're not going to have to pay out of pocket, and two, like, there are ways to find time? Like, how do... It feels kind of like you're at a rock and a hard place a little bit.
You are. Yes, I think WIC does a good job of that. I mean, not only are we talking about when I worked there, not only are we talking about, you know, healthy foods and giving those stipends for the food for families, but you're also getting that breastfeeding education piece. So if you're part of that program, you're definitely getting that education. And then I know in Tennessee, I mean, even if any insurance that you're on, if you have health insurance, and in Tennessee, if you're pregnant and you can't afford it, you automatically get enrolled, or you don't automatically get enrolled in TennCare, care, but you qualify for TennCare, and you can get a free breast pump.
Oh,
so if you do have to go back to work, you would be able to pump. And I say you would be able to because there are federal and state laws now that have been passed to protect pumping mothers at work. So if you are listening to this and you work somewhere and they're not letting you have a pump break,
that's inhumane.
Call HR.
Call HR. You can even just, you can email me and I will help you out with that because, yeah, those laws are there to protect. But that doesn't make it easy.
No, yeah. Can we switch gears a little bit?
Yes.
I kind of want to get into the postpartum depression conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a mother, but also I'm just not very well versed in what it is. And I have friends who have had children and some of them have experienced postpartum depression. But if I were to like have a friend that I was closer to and be able to kind of like provide support, I'm just curious about what all that entails and what the warning signs are. So could you like just kind of explain to us like what postpartum depression is?
Yes. And first, let me say, I'm not a mental health professional, so this is my understanding of it. But postpartum depression it's basically just depression after giving birth. So there is this period of time right after birth. You might hear people talk about the baby blues in the first 2 weeks after birth. And a lot of times your emotions are spiraling, going up and down during that time because so are your hormones. So chemically, your body's doing something that might be affecting how you feel. But then past that 2-week mark, if you're feeling signs of depression, So if you're feeling like you can't get out of bed, like you can't take care of your baby, like you don't want to be around your baby, if you're having intrusive thoughts, anything like that, you're probably experiencing postpartum depression or anxiety. And I think the first thing to do, so if you're asking, like, how could I support a friend, you make them aware of it. Like, hey, you haven't spoken like this before. Are you sure everything is okay? Listen and be there for them. Be a safe space so that they can be open and honest about those feelings. Because I think a lot of times, like, and I have found myself in this position, like as a new mom, people ask how you're doing constantly. And you want to make them feel good. So you just say, I'm great. The baby's awesome. It's so fun having a baby and everything's perfect and wonderful. And that is not the case. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard. And so being a friend who you can, like, be like, you can say whatever you need to say to me. You don't have to sugarcoat. You know, I know you love your baby and you're excited the baby's here. So, yeah. And then as far as, like, what to do if you're noticing those signs, you would contact your OBGYN or your midwife. They're kind of like the first line of defense. Typically, they will just prescribe you medication. So if that's not what you're looking for, I just highly recommend talk therapy. And that would be like checking with your insurance company to see if you have coverage or finding something out of pocket. Or there are a lot of free groups out there, too.
Does medication affect breast milk as well if you do?
They would. So your doctor would ask you if you're breastfeeding. And if you are, they would put you on a medication that would not affect your breast milk.
Great. So there are options.
Yes, for sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does having postpartum depression affect breast milk production?
Stress does, so yes. Mm. Yeah, so, yeah, elevated cortisol levels affect so many things in your body. So if you are stressed, that can have a negative impact on your milk supply, for sure.
Mm. I feel like men get a cold and have postpartum depression.
I agree with you.
That is actually a question. This is kind of a diversion. But okay, has anyone watched Jane the Virgin?
No.
I know you haven't because we've talked about this.
Yeah. I haven't.
It's one of my favorite shows on Netflix to watch. But it's about like a girl who accidentally gets artificially inseminated and becomes pregnant, and she's like never had sex, so she decides to like keep the baby, and it's hilarious. But there is a latter season, one of the characters, his wife or his no not his wife his ex gets has a baby, and when the baby comes, he finds himself like very uninspired and very like sad, and so he looks up online and finds that like men can have postpartum depression.
That's a thing.
I wanted to know because I was like, did he do that? Did they just do that for the show to make it like funny, or is this like a real?
No, that is a thing. I don't know the like science behind all of that and like why, but yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
So it's a profound empathy. That's what it is. You just feel you're so connected to
your partner. Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or some sort of like just like general anxiety about being like a parent can affect like, what should I do? Should I go back to work? Maybe there's a degree of guilt. Like men
100%.
Get more paternity leave than women do in the United States. So it's like maybe there's a degree of like, oh, like I didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
Like, but now all of a sudden I'm responsible for this life. Like,
I think it's also, and this is something that I feel like my husband and I have been dealing with. I think it's also like you make the decision, or we made the decision to have a child, and we were really excited to have a child. And, you know, we thought we knew kind of what it was going to be like a little bit, just based off of like friends' experiences and whatever. You don't know what anything's going to be like. But we didn't really account for like what a big adjustment it was going to be. You know, we're in our 30s. We've been living on our own, just taking care of ourselves for so long. Like, we didn't really account for like what that adjustment was going to be like. And so maybe some partners like experience some depression because of that.
Yeah. Are you talking
know.
Like community, like social, now you know, like your mom has to, or like having the grandparents involved and like having the uncles and aunts and cousins and like everybody involved in the child's life, whereas before, that, like, you know, you're saying you're living on your own, or is that,
oh,
what,
no,
you,
no.
Is that what you mean? Or
no, I'm thinking more so like, we can do whatever we want whenever we want.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now,
the freedom.
Like,
yeah.
The freedom.
Now
and like,
there's the boss at
yeah.
home.
Boss baby.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's and like, hey.
Yes. And like the way that I knew how to take care of myself from like a nervous system standpoint, I like feel like I had that down pat like really well. And now I can't do those yeah. same things. Like I can't just go on a walk when I want to. I can't just go on a drive and like, you know what I mean? Like if you had certain ways of coping with hard things in your life like that, you might have to find new ways yeah. to do that.
Yeah.
Because there's a life at home. Because
there's another responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think postpartum too, like, so I myself have not delivered a baby, but I have had the privilege of being around people who have had babies mm-hmm. and have been involved in their lives. And it seems like that 2 weeks, like after you give birth, you're like just really grateful that you, like, it's hard to like go to the bathroom
mm-hmm.
sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's like hard to even adjust back into your body, like get back into your body, mm-hmm. it seems like.
You mean like the physical aspect of
like your physical
birth?
Body. Yeah.
Yes.
Like physically giving birth and then yes. your body's readjusting to like.
Totally.
Because how I've heard it said before is that you don't have your period for 9 months, and then after you give birth, it's like the 9 months are like coming back
it's
at
like
once.
The flood,
yes.
The great flood,
yes,
the Red Sea's here.
Yeah, and it's not your period; it is called something different.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't get into the gory details of all that, but yeah, it's such an adjustment on your body after you give birth. I mean, I feel like I'm at a place, luckily, now, and I think breastfeeding helps with this because it does help. When you start breastfeeding, your uterus starts contracting back to size, which kind of helps get your body back to normal. And I'm saying normal in air quotes because my body's definitely different. But yes, that's a huge adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
And from a mental health like perspective, like if you were someone with like an eating disorder or dealing with something like, I can't imagine, like, pregnancy would be hard and then postpartum also. I mean,
yeah.
Is there, like, a difference between how, like, the methods of the baby, like a vaginal birth or C-section or, like, an emergency C-section
mm-hmm.
or something that, does that affect the physical, I guess, and mental?
I think that affects definitely physical
yeah.
And definitely mental, too. Yeah, I think the goal of most women, there are a lot of women that choose, for whatever reason, will choose a scheduled C-section. But I think the majority are going for a vaginal delivery. And sometimes plans change, whether your baby's breached or maybe there's another risk situation. So whether it's like a changed into a C-section or you have a emergency C-section, that's a huge adjustment. And I even have some friends that ended up in that situation and had to like mourn the birth that they thought they would have. I think
yeah.
most women, even if you're having a vaginal delivery, you might have, if it's your first baby, you might have these ideas of what it's going to be like, and then it doesn't go that way.
Yeah.
And then you're having to like mourn that part.
Yeah.
Same with breastfeeding. I mean, a lot of women want to breastfeed, and if it doesn't work out, and you know, you have to mourn that part of your journey into parenthood, which is hard.
Yeah. What are some ways that maybe you have for yourself, kind of like if you've had to mourn things about expectations that you had giving
yeah.
birth, like what are some ways that you tried to keep yourself from going to a place where you felt like down on yourself
yeah.
or like less than because things didn't happen the way that you wanted
yeah.
them to?
I mean, I feel like I'm living in that right now with breastfeeding. So being a lactation counselor, I definitely put pressure on myself to breastfeed and for it to be perfect, I guess. I think I'm just realizing these last few days I have these like perfection expectations of myself. And I don't know if that's just because I'm a lactation counselor. It's probably just part of who I am. But yeah, breastfeeding's not going exactly how I wanted it to or thought it would. We're dealing with some like latching issues and things where, you know, from someone who's trained in this, from like from textbooks, not from experience, I just thought things would be different at this point at 3 months now. And they're not. And I've had a few really bad days recently where I have felt like, what is wrong with me? What am I doing wrong here? And I'm trying to like course correct into what we talked about at the beginning with like trying to be flexible and reminding myself that like every baby is different. Every breastfeeding journey is different. That's goes for every birth experience is different. Like, you know, there's not this like perfect way to really do anything.
Yeah.
So we're dealing with, my son has a tongue tie, which that's kind of a buzzword nowadays, but that's basically where, just in layman's terms, there's a piece of tissue under your tongue that can be really tight and it's attached to the bottom of your mouth. And you want your, when you're breastfeeding, you want your tongue to function a specific way so that it's not painful for the mom and so that baby can transfer enough milk every nursing session. And so, yeah, he has a tongue tie. I've known he had one since the day he was born. I'm like trained to see them. but I kind of denied it because I was very fortunate. I had a wonderful birth experience and I had a great pregnancy too. And I think I was just riding high on all of that. And then knowing what I know too much about like breastfeeding difficulties. I just didn't want to face that. I didn't want to face that like, we're going to have to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And so now we are. We've started working with a myofunctional therapist. There are some ways you can help with tongue ties. You can see a myofunctional therapist. You can see chiropractic. You can find a good release provider and get it clipped. So there's all there's solutions. But it's all big decisions and hard.
Sure.
So yeah, that's what we're dealing with. And as of today, I feel like I'm in a good place. But maybe yesterday I was not feeling this way.
Yeah. I feel like just with womanhood in general, a lot of the time I feel like there are expectations on us that have been taught to us since childhood.
Yeah.
And that we internalize and expect, okay, this is how these very like milestone type of experiences are supposed to go. And when they don't go the way that we see in like the movies or how we heard from other friends, it has like a very damaging
100% effect. Yeah.
Like I don't want to say too much, but I went to the first time I ever had a pap smear. I was told, like, when you turn this age, you're supposed to get them. You want to make sure you don't have cervical cancer, whatever. And it was so uncomfortable. I couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
And I think also just the doctor that I had was very dismissive and not very nice. So, but I literally was like, I'm an adult now. I'm going to do this thing that adult girls do. And I'm going to take care of my, like, sexual health. And then, like, not being able to, like, handle all that to say, I left the doctor's office, incompleted pap smear, and literally got in my car and, like, wept.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm an adult. I'm supposed to be able to do this. All the girls are doing this.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I can't do a thing that, like, is so simple. It just felt very, like, debilitating for whatever reason. And I, like, called my dad because my mom wasn't around. So I had to call my dad and I'm like, I couldn't do it. I don't know what to do. And it was just the worst experience. So it's like, I can only imagine, like, being a mother or expecting mother and having all of these ideas of, like, what motherhood is supposed to look like, what giving birth is supposed to look like, what breastfeeding is supposed to look like, and raising a child, all of these like expectations, and like feeling like you've fallen short of that, like how that, it's like hitting yourself up against the wall a little bit.
I am so sorry that was your experience. Mm-hmm. And you are not the only one who has had that experience. Mm-hmm. I literally was having a conversation with a friend last week, and she described that exact same thing. I think what that comes down to, and I could have a whole nother podcast conversation about this, is just like trauma-informed care in the women's health space. Mm-hmm. I mean, there, anything that has to do with our, I'll just say, private parts is very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so when something's not explained to you, like, this is probably going to hurt, or yeah, I'm about to start this now, or whatever, like, that's going to make it even worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could talk about that for a while, because I've had experiences like that, too. We might get into it in these questions, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And that kind of goes, that goes back to that insufficient, perceived insufficient milk supply. Mm-hmm. I think maybe as a society, women, we feel like we are not enough. Mm-hmm. And so when you start being the sole provider of nutrients for your baby, like, it would be very easy to fall into, there's no way I'm going to be able to provide enough for, to keep my baby healthy and alive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's like kind of like a natural reaction almost.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So, yeah. And I just didn't have that because I'm a lactation counselor, and I know, mm-hmm, like, that's a huge benefit of having this education going into this, is like knowing how all of that works.
Yeah.
But most of my clients, like, were having that conversation.
Yeah.
And most, I haven't met many lactation counselors that are lactation counselors first. Mm-hmm. A lot of women become CLCs or IBCLCs after their experience.
Mm. So, yeah, you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, like almost 8 years. Yeah. So yeah, it's a really interesting experience going from like knowing all this stuff to like, yeah, then doing it and being like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
But I do, but I don't.
Yeah. It's like you don't really know until you actually are doing.
Yes.
Like true knowing is doing.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for listening. There will be a part two to this episode, so make sure that you tune in 2 weeks to hear the rest of our mental health and motherhood episode. And remember, your mind matters.